today I have an excellent organized presentation for today. I tried to just give some nuggets that I've heard recently. Some will relate to the holiday itself. Some will relate to the inyanim of tefillah that we add on to the davening in Chanukah, which is of course Al Hanisim, which being the sign, the Rav will speak about on Tuesday, so we're not really going to address that. That's correct. And the Haneiros Halalo, which we recite in the context of lighting of Hanukkah candles, plus the brachos that are added on then, as well as various minhagim that add on additional songs of praise to Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Halal is also, of course, stated, but that's not unique to Hanukkah. You have it in other areas too, other holidays as well. And you have various additional piyutim that are recited in different communities, and of course, the most famous is the Ashkenazic Mo Sur Yeshua Fi. Even though it's not, it's certainly post Talmudic, exactly when the author of whose name seems to be Mordechai, based on the signature of the poetry there. But just took a quick look, sounds like he lived somewhere around the 1200s. So I wanted to comment a little bit on again on the holiday and the tefillos that we had in. The festival of Chanukah in the Gemara is called by the name Chanukah, which interestingly the Rishonim did not all give the clear answer as to why it's called Chanukah, and sometimes they resorted to more on the level of gematria or wordplay in order to explain the name of the holiday. The famous Ran and the Gemara in Shabbos. The story of Chanukah is fairly well known. Is and the halachos, I should say, of Chanukah recorded in two or three pages in the Gemara in Shabbos. It's a question in its own right. Why there's no masech to Chanukah? And the simple reason for that is because the and not enough halachos about Chanukah itself to take up an entire Masechta, and even Masechta Megillah, which is about Purim, but not all of it is about Megillah either. So for whatever reason, there is no Masechta Chanukah. There is a very unique approach given by the Ramban, but I never quite understood it, so I'm not gonna say it over now. But he says the Rabbi Yehuda Nasi deliberately did not create a Masechta Chanukah. Because he was upset at the fact that the Hashemites took over the Yehuda kingdom, which they had no right to do. So that's a little troubling, but that answer, but that's what he does say. In any case, there is no Masechta Chanukah, but it is mentioned in a few places. It's mentioned in a few daf of Masechta Shabbos. And the Rishonim there, some of them try to analyze why it's called Chanukah. The Gemara begins its discussion of the historical background of Chanukah, quoting from a sefer called the Megillah Sinus, which is a sefer of one of the earliest writings of the Torah Sheba'al Peh that was written down. And that's why it's called the Megillah, because it was actually written down. It's supposed to be the same as Masechta Tainus, which was oral. Megillah Sinus was written down, and included within its misleading title for the sefer, included within it all the minor holidays, meaning all of the holidays of the ilk of Chanukah and Purim, whose main halachos were expressed in the negatives, in the sense that they were festive so that you could not engage in hesped and tainus, meaning you cannot fast on them and you could not recite a eulogy over the departed during those minor holidays. And the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah has a debate with a conclusive ruling as to whether or not any of those minor holidays apply in our era, and the Gemara concludes they do not, with the exception of Chanukah and Purim. It's a very ancient work, put into writing before the Gemara was, and definitely before the Mishnah was compiled as well. It was known in the days of the Abaye Sheni. So basically, when just to give a flavor of what's included in the Megillah Tainus. So, as is well known, there was always a massive conflict in the period of the Baal Sheni between internal enemies and external enemies. internal enemies in terms of the Greeks and later the Romans, and external enemies and internal enemies in terms of both Hellenists in the days of the Hasmonaim, a force that didn't cease to exist after the victory of Hanukkah, but just had been subdued, and would sometimes come back to haunt Klal Yisrael in later decades in that era, but also the rise of various groups and sectarian strife, what is known as the Tzidukim and the Baisusim, the Sadducees and the Boethusians, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, more or less, those who rejected the Torah Sheba'al Peh, and especially toward the end period of the Bais Sheni, which very well could be what at least one of the themes of the Brocha V'lam Moshinim was all about. Not necessarily about the early Christians, which might have been included, but the Minim, which roughly translated as sects, the various groups that existed then, as the tour guides all tell you in Israel, the people of the cave, the people of light, but I don't know what all the names was, the Essenes, and so on and so forth. These were all these splinter groups who were creating their own mini-religions under the banner of Judaism. And oftentimes, they strove for political recognition on the from the perspective of the overlords, which again, in different eras, were either sometimes irreligious Jews who were there, or Romans, or Greeks, etc. So, the Megillas Tainis, getting back, is a listing of various holidays that were organized and instituted as days of festivity. This one blank, I don't know if it's on or not. Commemorating various events, either some physical and some spiritual, when the mainstream Jews were victorious over these forces. So sometimes it was some miraculous military victory, or at least salvation. For example, there was a story about a great Roman legion that was marching against the Beis HaMikdash, and there was a massive snowstorm. It's recorded in Josephus also. And I think Tyro, something like that, was the name of the general, and his troops were all frozen to death or whatever, or couldn't march in Jerusalem, and he declared a holiday on that day, a minor festival. And the holiday expressed itself in the fact that one could not fast and one could not have a hesped. So, and then there are other holidays that have to do with a religious nature. For example, the Tzidukim. We're always trying to start up with the Prussian and use their political influence to try to institute a certain misinterpretation of halacha in the Beis HaMikdash. So for example, whether it was bringing, let's say, the Korban Omer, which was brought, according to our traditions, the day after the first day of Pesach. But the Torah describes it as Machras HaShabbos. So the literal interpretation, which the Siddukim chose to go with, was that it's always brought on Sunday. It's always brought on Sunday. That means that 50 days later is a Shavuos. That's the Gemara tells. I don't know if the joke or whatever, but the Siddukim would say that Moshe Rabbeinu was an Oy of Yisrael, and he wanted us to have a long weekend. So he always wanted Shavuos to be on Sunday. So this way we have Shabbos and Sunday. Now we've graduated and we complain about long Yom Tovim. Oh no, a 3-day Yom Tov, etc. And an Israeli now will come back to America and say, oh, 2 days of Yom Tov, how do you manage? So the Gemara had a different perspective, even with the perspective of the Siddukim. That Moshe is an Oy Yisrael, he wants to have a long weekend. So of course it was ridiculous. But and it was against our Mesorah of the Torah Sheba'al Peh. So when they were victorious over them in at least being able to enforce the correct halacha in the Mikdash, so they made a Yom Tov, and so on and so forth. So again, a lot of the holidays deal with physical salvation, and some of them deal with spiritual victory in the sense of being able to institute a certain correct halacha. And again, keeping in mind the era when the Tzidukim a lot of times are buying up the position of the Kohen Gadol from the Roman overlords, so it was a terrible period when these kinds of even small victories would be celebrated. Yeah.
Isn't Simchas Beis HaShoeva one of these victories?
What do you mean? About the Nitzach HaMayim. Now, but was that celebration in celebration of the fact that...
There was a discussion between the Tzidukim and the Prushim.
Right, for sure.
And I don't know if Simchas Beis Rosh Hashoeva is commemorating the Devin, but
right.
this was the tool that Devin.
It could be. I think the latter. It could be. You know, I never had seen this before, but you're giving forth an interesting theory that one of the aspects of joy in the Simchas Beis Rosh Hashoeva was you have a lot that we demonstrate in a very dramatic way the Torah Shebaal Peh. So, but I'm not sure if that's the case here. Whether the Simchas Beis Rosh Hashoeva was because of that. But it certainly is true that there was a battle between the Prushim and the Sedukim in that regard about whether to pour the water or not. Famous episode in the Maran Sukkah, I think, about one of the Siduki kings who poured the water on his feet and they stoned him with the Esrogim. So that seems to be the foot of Franco. I don't have a watch, so since it's late. Anyway, we're almost done, I see, and went off on a little bit of a tangent, so let's just bring it home here. So the Megillas Tainis describes the minor festivals, including Chanukah and Purim, and the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah concludes that the only holidays that continue to exist in our commemoration are Purim and Chanukah, which of course leads to the question of why were they more significant than any of the other victories as well. So obviously there's something that transcends the individual era in which it occurred, and therefore we have to commemorate it later as well. So Purim, somewhat easier to see, because we were dealing with a situation where had Purim not occurred, so there would be no Jewish people. So that seems to be a holiday that has greater significance, even though many point out there are other sub-themes as well for Purim, but on the surface you're able to see why it transcends everything. And similarly Chanukah, because Chanukah, if not for the victory over the Yevanim, so it would just be a matter of time till all the Jews assimilated, and there will be no Jewish nation, not because of physical eradication, but because of spiritual eradication. So you have two festivals that commemorate two separate Yeshuos that Hashem brought about, each in different ways, one preserving the physical existence of Klal Yisrael, and one preserving the spiritual existence of Klal Yisrael. And had these occurrences not occurred, that makes a lot of sense, had these miracles, had they not occurred, then there would be no Klal Yisrael. So that, whereas many of the other holidays that are commemorated in the Megillas Tainis, even had they not occurred, so there would have been a disaster brought about, but it wouldn't necessarily have brought the Chalil or the end of the Jewish nation. However, many of the Baalei HaMachshava, in writing on Chanukah, which is of course our theme for today, try to uncover different nuggets of central themes in our religion that make the holiday of Chanukah transcendent beyond the era in which it occurred. And I believe the two main themes that are described is, and of course they all have to do with light, because the holiday, interestingly, by Josephus is referred to not as the holiday of Chanukah, but as the festival of lights. So that common, at least English term of a festival of lights, had a very ancient source for it. And that light is described in various forms as either A, representing the light of the Beis HaMikdash, and the fact that the Nes occurred with the menorah is of course very parallel to that idea. I just heard a shiur from the current Rosh Yeshiva of Kerem Biavne, of Mati Greenberg, Shlita, when he quoted the pasuk in Malachim, where it says that the chalonot of the Beis HaMikdash were shkufim atumim, which means closed and open. So the Gemara explains that they were closed, they were very narrow on the inside and they were wide on the outside. And the symbolism being that the light of the Beis HaMikdash is supposed to shine outward to the whole world. That the Beis HaMikdash didn't need internal, didn't need the sunlight to shine in, but that the light of the Beis HaMikdash would shine out to the whole world. And that's an idea that my Rebbe Rav Shechter Shlita developed also at length, trying to point out how the second Beis HaMikdash was hashkafically tied into the third. Looking at the watch, we don't have time to elaborate on that too much, but ties into a presentation of the Rambam that the first Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael disappeared at the time of the Babylonian conquest, but the second Kedusha of Ezra, when they returned, never disappeared. So that the third Beis HaMikdash that eventually will be built in Mehera So that halachically is more of an extension of the second. In other words, there are really two batei mikdash. There's the first, and then there's the second third. And even though we're in a current hiatus of that second third, but we await its rebuilding, which is ultimately a continuation of the second. One way in which to see that is that the Lomdei Daf Yomi are aware of the fact that there's a Masechta Shas called Masechta Midos that's all about the dimensions of the second Beis HaMikdash. And the obvious question is, why have a Masechta about that? It's not relevant anymore. There should be a Masechta about the third Beis HaMikdash. So the commentaries explain, because there is a prophecy from Yechezkel that describes in great detail the architecture of the third Beis HaMikdash. And the Rambam, amongst the other Mefarshim, on Masechta Midos notes that the Chachamim of that generation knew that although this second one would ultimately be destroyed, but that hashkafically it is to be linked to the third. So what they did, something very interesting, in the second Beis HaMikdash, they built it with a lot of elements of the third, but not totally like the third. That's what the commentaries write. And again, the point being, because they knew this would not be the final Beis HaMikdash, so they had no right to write it in accordance with the Nevuah of Yechezkel, to build it, with the Nevuah of Yechezkel exactly, but they put in elements of it. So that's why Masechta Midos, although it is really a description of the second, but much of it will be halach l'maaseh in terms of the third. So that's one additional theme that's developed, that we are celebrating the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has eternally promised that He will rest His Shechina within our midst, as demonstrated by the Beis HaMikdash, and that it continues to do so in a more hidden way, but we look forward to the day when we once again will have that more revealed Shekhinah and be able to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a more intense way. So that holiday of Chanukah, in the middle of a dark era of the second Beis HaMikdash, showed us that this concept of Mikdash will eternally exist. One sub-theme of the light of Chanukah, symbolizing the light of the Mikdash, and ultimately a Chag of Chanukah, meaning of rededication of the Mikdash. But what do you mean? But it was destroyed. So why should we celebrate that forever? It's not something, the dedication of the Mizbeach. But that was also destroyed. But that this was a divine sign of the fact that there will ultimately be the final round of that Mikdash, and provides the confidence through the exile that such a thing will occur. What I started out by saying is that the Ran, the famous Ran in the commentary on the Gemara, says that Chanukah is Chanu Chafei, because they rested on the 25th. But many of the later Mefarshim point out, a little bit not so understandable, why the Ran had to go to a kind of like a Gematria in order to explain the word Chanukah, unless he was just trying to throw in an extra, pop roast. But usually the Rishonim don't do that. Well, why not say Chanukah is Chanukah, meaning Mizmashir Chanukah is Vayas Zavid, because they've dedicated the Mikdash. So, but be that as it may, the simple meaning of the name of the holiday is exactly that. Because it's a dedication of the Beis HaMikdash, which ultimately will occur again. And even though, what's the connection between the two? So the connection being that because the second and the third Beis HaMikdash are linked. Just to conclude with one other major sub-theme that's especially spoken about, say in the Pachad Yitzchak of Avutner, and Sifri Chassidus, Shem Yishmul, and so on and so forth. And they all quote from the statement of the Baal Shem Tov. Because in the days of creation, as they point out, 25th word of the Torah is Or, Remez, Chanukah, Chafei, and Yavon is referred to by the Medrash as the Golus of Choshech, and the light of the menorah was victorious over the Choshech of Yavon. So it's well known that the first day Hashem created light. And that was not the light of the sun, as we know, because the fourth day the sun was created. So Rashi explains that originally there was a great light created, but Hashem saw that the world was not ro'oy for this light, so He hid it away, and that's why it was called the Or HaGonus. And it lasted for a period of time within the days of creation. This Midrashim had them lasting either 36 hours, which is a remez for the nearest of Hanukkah, 36 candles, or it lasted, till the... Or it lasted until the end of the Masoi Shabbos. But either way, we don't have that light anymore. So, Gonzo la Tzadikim Lasid Lavo. That's the language of Rashi. That he hid it away for Tzadikim Lasid Lavo. So what is that light all about? So, we know that everything in the physical world is parallel to the spiritual world. So what does light do? It gives us clarity. If you live in a world of darkness, you can't see anything. You don't know what's what. An animal looks like a tree, a tree looks like a rock, a human being looks like a wall, your wife looks like the grocer, and your husband looks like your friend. You can't tell anything in the darkness. So So light is, of course, what is a physical phenomenon that highlights what we mean on a deeper plane by light, which is understanding, true understanding. Which is why, you know, whenever someone has a great idea, you have a light bulb, you know, shines up above his head, you know, eureka, so on and so forth. So light is symbolic of the ultimate goodness, which is knowledge of God. That's the ultimate schar, is to be able to appreciate more and more about God. Now, to appreciate all of that, that a human being can comprehend, so that's not roi for Rishoyim, that they should be given this great light to be able to understand all of the secrets of creation and more and more about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're not roi for that. So Hashem, realizing in advance that plan A of the world was going to fail, meaning that Adam and Chava were going to sin the Eitz Hadas and they were going to be moved into a new kind of existence, and that it would take quite a long time until mankind would be zocha to that eternal and the ethereal light, meaning understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he hid away that light. For the tzaddikim la'asid lavo, meaning for olam haba. So here the Baal Shem Tov has a famous statement, says, and where did he hide the light? He says, hidden. Where did he hide it? So the Baal Shem Tov is quoted as saying they hid it in the Torah. What does it mean, hid it in the Torah? That the wisdom of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was presented to us at Har Sinai provides to us a vehicle through which we can at least come to at least an air of that light, of that great light that Hashem hid. So we speak about the whole battle between the Yevanim and the Chashmonaim. What was it about on a theological plane? It was that the great military might of the Yevon, coupled with the Greek culture, wanted to create a new world order. That basically man is supreme, wisdom is arrived at solely through human efforts, and that the purpose of man's wisdom is not to figure out why they're in the world and how to connect to their creator, but rather just to make discoveries about as much as you can, and to create beauty in the world, whether it's music or art and so on and so forth. In other words, what we would call a shell of wisdom, but nothing essential. And it upset the Greek nation that there was another nation out there that had a whole different view of what wisdom is all about. As Rav Greenberg put it, "Ein uman miskanei ela bebaram nuse." An artisan is only jealous of someone who's in the same league. So if you're a major league baseball player, so A-Rod might be jealous of Barry of Bonds. I forgot the first name. I'm out of baseball already. And a great writer might be jealous of another novelist. But a great writer is not going to be jealous of, you know, a little kid who writes down, you know, see spot run. It's not in the same league. Even amongst Rabbanim, you know, Kinasol from Tar B'Chochma. Sometimes jealousy leads to greater wisdom. But a great rabbi is not going to be jealous of, you know, a kid who's reading Alphabet. So the Greeks were jealous of Klal Yisrael because they were in the same league. They were both in the business of Chochma, of trying to apply the mind in a very intense way. So for the Greeks, though, it was this shell of wisdom. For the Jews, it was a more penetrating wisdom to try to see God in everything and uncover what our mission in the world is. So they wanted to destroy this light. That was a famous film. It's not really for kids, for adults, but for kids too. It's called Lights. So they try to highlight this idea. The concept of Judaism was encapsulated with the Or HaTorah, and the Greeks wanted to take away that light. They wanted to substitute, you know, all those olive bases that were floating out of those, I don't know, I assume most of you have seen it, you know, floating out of the candles with Greek letters. You know, the cold metal, the immense symbolism there. So the victory of the Chashmonaim over the Yevanim was ultimately the victory of the Or HaTorah over the false Or of Yevan, which again in Chazal is referred to as Choshech. And that theme is eternal. That even though the military victory has ceased, but that theme of pointing out that, as my other Rosh Yeshiva of Goldberg itself, Kambi Avner, the former Rosh Yeshiva, stated, that Tachlis Chochma Shuva Masim Tovim. We view the goal of wisdom as transforming the personality to return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to increase your Maisim, as opposed to a wisdom which is just the shell of a wisdom which in no way affects your personality. And just to end with just an interesting parparos, some spice, again, so I'm going late, just to develop in the time we had. So Rav Greenberg mentioned that it's no coincidence that Hashgacha arranged that this holiday should take place not only in the dead of winter, but at the time, approximately in the calendar, when the days start getting longer. Chanukah falls out right around what's called in classic sources, Tkufas Teves, or in the scientific terminology, the winter solstice. Which is when the day, short of Shabbos, right? December 21st, is it? That's exactly when the days start getting longer. So the remez of Chanukah is that even though there will be times when that light will, the light of Torah, will be, there will be attempts to quench it, but ultimately it's always going to rebound. And which is exactly what the Chashem Noim did, to allow for a rebound of that Or HaTorah. And then he went further and said that this holiday of light not only existed in the days of Chanukah, but it existed all the way in the days of Adam HaRishon. You always hear new things. So if you look in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah is something called Yom Edom. That means, and again, to a large extent doesn't really apply nowadays, but they had certain Avodah Zarah holidays that Jews were forbidden to do business with non-Jews during those holidays, and even some days before. Because the fear was that these Ovdei Avodah Zarah, when they struck a good business deal, would use it as an opportunity to serve their God more. So it's kind of like a lift in the ivory. You don't want to put a stumbling block in front of them. So the Gemara records that one of the holidays is Chof Hei Kislev, 8 days before and 8 days afterward. And where does this holiday come from? So it says this holiday came from Adam HaRishon. So he, when he was chased out of Gan Eden, so the day started, assuming he was created in Tishrei, so the days started getting shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter, and he thought that ultimately it's going to go to zero, and he's going to live in a world of darkness forever. So then when he got to the winter solstice, and then it started getting longer and longer, he said, ah, this is Minhogo Shalom. This is the Teva of the world, so I don't have to worry that I'm going to be in darkness. On a deeper plane, what Hashem was showing him is that, yes, you are Mechabe Oro Shalom. You blew it. You blew my whole plan for the world, but nonetheless, there's a way to come back. So that's what happened exactly on Chof Hei Kislev, which the Gemara in Avodah Zarah already speaks about. He says, what's the oldest holiday in the world? Someone asks you, says, it's Chof Hei Kislev. So the Gemara concludes that Adam HaRishon, he had in mind the Tova, because he made a holiday then to symbolize this idea of Hashem's kindness to him, that it was going to allow it to be more and more light. And the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, they somehow, you know, took it for their own purposes. So I guess, I don't know how much the anti-Semites seek out the Avos Yisrael blog, but so what Rav Greenberg's approach was, that he thinks that an echo of that is ultimately the non-Jewish holiday, of that ancient, even though that's not why they say it is. And he said it's interesting that for them also it's light. They're not necessarily knowing why they have lights, but that on a deeper plane is what the festival is all about. It's about coming back to that light and trying to light up the darkness of the winter. So the Yeratzon, we should be able to take the true light of Chanukah, which is the Ora Torah, and to be able to make the world a more lightful place with the light of Torah.
I want to know the Daf Yomi, that whether the world was Nissan, or in Tishrei, was still a Kaf Aleph, a Kaf Hei that the for what was created, and then a man on the first. So the Kaf Hei, your light, in the world.